Penny Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki. Don't ask me. I have no idea why I said it that way. Other than I am who I am, and that's all that I am. I can't do it. I worked on a Popeye the Sailor imitation since I was a kid. Hang around the house and. My mother would go, "Stop that! Stop that imitation! It's hard on my something. I don't know." Oh, it's gonna be one of those days. So, how are ya? Today is Wednesday, July the 9th of 2025, and July 4th is over. The day of horror for pets, horror for our puppy dog. She did not like it a bit. Now, a year ago, she was just a tiny wee puppy. Little Coco Bean. Our little Coco Bean. She's now a much bigger Coco Bean. And she's a big dog. She's really, she's going to be a tiny little boo. She's a much bigger pup. But, oh, gosh, is she sweet. Oh, whoa, she's so sweet. And I love her to pieces. We do love her too, and she still sits on my lap every day, at least once, twice, three times, a puppy, and I love it, and she's wonderful. So there you are, and here I am, and it's all good and well. So, what's new for you? Is the world better? Is it just as strange as it was last week? Because, boy, howdy, it's pretty weird from where I'm sitting. And, every now and then I kind of get a glimpse of how strange it really is and how it got that way. I get a pretty good idea of how it got that way. But there's no use in crying over spilt batlawa, which is baklava. It's actually pronounced in the Middle East, some parts of the Middle East. Yeah, what can you do? So I've got, I think, an interesting thing to talk about today, something that's interesting to me, and you may find it interesting as well. We've been talking about Tarot the last couple of weeks. Tarot or not Tarot, that is the question. And if you don't want to go anywhere in the water, then drop those oars. Forget about it. Don't do it. Be lazy like moi. I am certainly a lazy. I don't know if I'm lazy. I just don't always like to do things. But maybe that's the very definition of laziness. I don't know. But what I do know is that I love certain things and they turn me on, you know. And one of them is divination and using the tools and getting kind of a kick out of doing so and playing with them and working with them. And I've been working with Tarot for, over 50 years, actually longer than that, since I was just a wee tiny little baby. Well, not a baby, but a kid. I was just a kid when I started all this. It's one of those things where you're so warped that it's just the thing you're going to do. And you decide at a young age that you're going to worry everyone around you and people are going to consider you be yet a be strange. He's a stranger kid. Boy, people did consider me strange for a long time. And telling some of the stories I've told, both here and, pardon me, and on the in the Power Peak, I realize now why. Maybe
things kind of went the way they did in school. I'm now kind of getting it. You know, why when I ran for president of student body, even though I won by votes, the administration said, no, I don't think we're going to allow Mo to be student body president. I won by almost 400 votes, and they said, he's not going to be the president. Should we let him be president? I think the answer is, that's not going to happen. And I think, no, not going to happen. It's just not going to be the way it is. So, because I was really kind of a radical freak. I was a freak. Not a mixture of French and Greek, although I have both French and Greek in me, which makes me a freak. That actually is from the Lucy show from many years back. But I do have French and Greek in me, and I have, believe it or not, some Swedish. So that's in there somewhere. That was a big secret on my mom's side of the family. My grandfather was 6'2", blue eyes, and very fair complected, as was my mother. And on my dad's side of the family, my grandmother said, we are pharaonic. We go all the way back to the pharaohs. But your grandfather's side, it turns out there's Turkish in his blood. And I don't know what difference that makes about anything, because some people think it's a big deal, and I don't. My mother used to say, you know, weird stuff like, you're the son of a professor, you can't wear jeans to school. And I thought, what, can't we afford them? You know, I couldn't figure out what she meant by that. Dungarees. My mother believed that, I think she thought that because they were called dungarees, that I don't think she thought they were made of dung. I'm pretty sure she knew they weren't. But that you cleaned up dung with dungarees. And so I couldn't wear blue jeans to school for a long time. I had to wear like polyester pants, which were oh so comfortable all the way through junior high school. You know, kids made fun of me. The kids made fun of me for all sorts of things, but you know, nope, don't you dare. Yeah, I know you don't feel sorry for me. I know you don't. But don't, because I learned to deal with things that way, you know. My funny hair, you know. Yeah, that rabbit was a lot of trouble. I'm kidding. You know, especially when he kept asking, what was up, Doc? And I didn't know what up, Doc was for a long time. Then I figured it out. Another Wednesday. You know, it's over 100 degrees outside. And poor Coco, she wants to go outside and play. She can't understand what's going on. I don't blame her. You know, she doesn't get it. She's only a year and some months old, couple months old. And it's like, what is going on here? You'll get it. You'll get it, my lovely little girl. Oh, I love things. I love being alive. I love the world. You know, there's some things about it I'd fine-tune. Trump. I'm kidding. Just let that go, Mo. Oh, gosh. You know, you gotta laugh. Gotta laugh at some things. I laugh a lot. I laugh a lot more than other people I know. And you gotta laugh. You just have to laugh. So I hope you're laughing at some things in life. You know, the absurdities. I love the absurdities of life. I love to laugh at the absurdities of life. And there's so much absurdity lately. Holy cannoli. Lots to laugh at. So last week, talked about Roe, and I've hinted at things like the Tree of Life. That's Chaim. 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 It can be said, you know, especially if someone across from you is wearing a protection of some sort. I've mentioned books like 777 and other Kabbalistic writings of Aleister Crowley. I've mentioned Sefer Sephiroth. I've mentioned The Golden Dawn. I've mentioned all sorts of things. And I will continue to mention all sorts of things because it has occurred to me that I love all sorts of things. I love all sorts of things. And it's good to talk about them. One of the things, I was on CA's show yesterday. last yesterday, Tuesday. And this is will be recorded and will be played again, and people will be listening, and they won't understand what I'm talking about. But I do talk about things and whatever. But we were talking about Vedic astrology, and we were talking about Uranus. I don't say Uranus anymore, although, you know, if I were a doctor, I might. But that's a different story completely. I'm so sorry. I am so juvenile. I really am. I can't help it, you know. Anyway, so you got to laugh. I've been, you know, you have to, otherwise you cry. But Uranus went into Gemini. It was going into Gemini, and it's going to be there for 8 years. 8 years. And so we were talking about that, and I mentioned that that Uranus is the Fool in Tarot, if you'd like to look at it that way. It's actually ruled by the planet, not by the planet, by the element of air. And so we discussed that, and that led me to think about the fact that I used to do readings on Tarot with Tarot that were essentially astrological readings with Tarot cards. And it was based upon what's known as the opening of the key. Now, for many of you listening, if anyone is still listening, God bless you. If anyone is still listening, the opening of the key, what is that? Have you ever heard of that? Some of you may have heard of the opening of the key. The opening of the key is a very famous sort of reading, but only for a rather certain demographic. That is those who may have heard of it through the Golden Dawn. Now, what is the Golden Dawn? The Golden Dawn was a magical order that was begun by Wynne Westcott and S.L. MacGregor Mathers. Now, Wynne Westcott was kind of the Surgeon General to Queen Victoria back in the day. And S.L. MacGregor Mathers was, I think, a rather wealthy sort of fellow, although I'm not 100% sure about that. But he was a Scottish fellow. And the two of them, well, the story goes that I believe Mathers ran across a series of papers that were Rosicrucian papers. And those Rosicrucian papers were, he found them in, I can't remember the story now, found them in a bookstore or a fruit, like a farmer's market, something. And they were authentic, and they gave permission to whoever found them to start a new order of Rosicrucianism. I may have that wrong, but neither here nor there, because what he did is he and Westcott started the Golden Dawn Order of Magic. And this Order of Magic, this is in the 1800s, the 1890s, as it were, maybe a little earlier than that. Yes, I believe so. And it was a very magical time. Eliphas Levi, Alphonse Louis Constant, but he took the name Eliphas Levi in France, was doing magical things. And he was a little predating that, I think 1870s, 80s. I don't know the exact time. He drew the very famous picture of Baphomet. The Goat of Mendes, you've seen it. People are freaked out by it. They consider it to be that a picture of Satan. It is not that at all. And it's rather, it's infamous and has caused a lot of trouble over the years, unfortunately. But that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. Things like that do things like that. And they're misunderstood. But he was a great magician. And I don't mean that like, you know, who knows? I mean, he was more about philosophical magic, I think, but he was a ritualist, I believe. And as a matter of fact, in Aleister Crowley's deck, the Hierophant is Eliphas Levi. And that's just the way that is. So the whole point here is
that this Golden Dawn was a magical order, and Aleister Crowley, when he was about, I think he was probably, he would have been about 21. He was born 1875, so that would be 1895, 96 or so, joined the Golden Dawn, and he splintered it when he became a member. And so that's that. But one of the things that they did, there were some very famous people who were members. Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula, was a member. Lots of famous actors and actresses. Aubrey Beardsley was a member of kind of the resurrected Golden Dawn. Aubrey Beardsley did erotic drawings. Who else? I can't remember off the bat, but it doesn't matter. Arthur Edward Waite was a member, of course. Arthur Edward Waite, who drew the Waite deck, or had the Waite deck commissioned, which is the most famous tarot deck in the world. The most famous deck. So it was really rather celebrated. One of the things they did was they devised a way of reading tarot known as the opening of the key. And the opening of the key had five different ways of answering a question. And it was so complicated. I mean, just remarkably complicated. And you learn it. And you can get this through a book called The Golden Dawn. System of Magic. And the Golden Dawn System of Magic, I first bought the book back in the 70s, maybe, yeah, 80s maybe, and it was so exciting. It's a big old huge book by the Falcon Press, and I was just so excited to get it. And indeed, it is an exciting thing. But the first time I saw the book was, no, the first time I saw the book was in the 70s, and it was in four volumes, and it was the original printings back from the 40s, maybe, at the Louisiana State University Library, which I couldn't believe they had it. It was introduced to me by my friend, the Druid. And he said, you need to read these. And I'm thinking, what, all of this? But the minute I started, I couldn't believe. It was just so magnificent. And his chela, his disciple, was already reading them. And so I was, you know, reading these books, and they were original, like, first editions. I'm sure someone has stolen them by now, because most people didn't even know what they were back then. They were talking back 75, 76. 76 is when I met him. And they were, they're really quite amazing. You can find these now in paperback. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, that sort of thing. They're written by Israel Regardi, who was Aleister Crowley's secretary for some time, and the Golden Dawn secretary. So anyway, if you're interested, I'll talk about that some other time if you're interested in such things. But it is a compendium of Western mysticism. That's what it is. It is everything you want to know about Western occultism and mysticism in a thick old book, including Anakism and angelic languages. I mean, it's just filled with all sorts of stuff. But it is the serious stuff. The Golden Dawn, by the way, still exists today. And they still have, they've got right here in my hometown. I'm not a joiner. I joined Freemasonry 30 years ago, and I kind of let that go away. Long, interesting, fascinating story about my tenure with Freemasonry. I caused an international scandal. International. Wait a minute. I didn't cause anything. My presence within their midst caused something just because of who I am. It's like stuff follows me around, you know. It's like Moby Dick. When Moby Dick was out at sea, everywhere he went, there were seagulls that followed him, or birds of some sort that followed him. You could tell because there were all these birds that squawked around him. Well, that's like me. Everywhere I go seems like trouble follows. So that was what happened with me in Freemasonry. Someday, maybe I'll tell the story, although it's such what, and I'm not a victim from this. It was fascinating. It's like, oh, well, this is cool. How did this happen that suddenly the whole world knew about my existence? They didn't know my name, hopefully, because, you know, well, they probably would have bumped me. And I don't mean that. But it was just, it was such a huge, much ado about nothing, a tempest in a teapot. But that's what happened.
anyway. So joining for me is like, no, thank you. But yeah, they're still around and they have their ceremonies and they have their rituals and they do their magic and this stuff and that stuff. So it's still around. But anyway, the tarot thing they do is called the opening of the key. And it's in five different parts. And it's very complicated. And you can learn it. You can learn it out of the book. But one of the things that happens is you do kind of an astrological thing with the cards. And so I, for years, used to do in my readings, when people come, I'd do what I call the linear astrological spread. And it was stunningly cool. And then after, you know, a dozen or so years of doing that, I just kind of said, you know, I just kind of riff with the cards. I just talk to the cards and the cards talk to me right back. And it's a wonderful way to read because it's like a conversation. It's like a talk show. You know, it's like sitting down and just talking to the cards, and you interview them, and they talk to you, and you ask them questions, and they talk back. But I've been dealing with the cards for most of my life. I've had a deck of tarot cards, an actual deck of tarot cards, not the ones I drew when I was a kid, but for over 60 years. So, you know, you get pretty conversant with them after a while. And when you do your own. But today I want to talk about this fusion of astrology and tarot. And it's a very powerful tool when you use it that way. You don't have to use it that way, but you certainly can. And it's a ton of fun. If you've ever dabbled in astrology and you've dabbled in tarot, then you can take this Jekyll and Hyde approach to it. And I use that kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek. But it's fun because you can have an amazing amount of time of fun with it. Now, you may not realize it, but tarot cards have astrological assignations to them. Not massignations, but assignations. There's a big difference there. So, for example, you can pick a card. Pick any card. And since I can't hear you, even if you shout real loud, I might hear you. Okay, someone said the sun. Well, the sun card. The sun card is ruled by the sun. How about the moon card? Someone yell real loud. What is the moon card ruled by? You're right. Pisces. It's not ruled by the moon, because what rules the moon card? Oh, you do know your cards. That's right. The priestess is ruled by the moon. So, you know, the cards have different rulerships. Mars rules the blasted tower, or just the tower. You don't have to cuss about it. It's, you know, it is a blasted tower, but that's... Did you know that the tower is based upon Saint Barbara? Saint Barbara. That iconography is Saint Barbara, who was an Egyptian saint. Yes, that's true. Saint Catherine is the wheel. They had to sneak it underneath the wire. You know, had to sneak it underneath the censers. Saint Catherine, who was broken upon the wheel, because she, you know, well, she was just not being very nice. I saw that iconography years and years and years ago when we had an exhibit come through town called The Treasures of the Vatican. And it was like pretty cool stuff, I have to admit, pretty cool stuff that came through from the Vatican. And there suddenly I was looking at a reliquary. And this reliquary was very cool because it had on it tarot stuff. And I went, what am I looking at? And yes, I ended with a preposition, but that is now completely okay. I read that. The OED said, you know, it's fine. And who is the OED? Well, of course, they are the Oxford English Dictionary. And if they say it's okay, and who are they, grammarians? Yes, now they are. So, and I said, cool, that's fine. So I'm looking at this reliquary, and it has on it the Hanged Man. And I went, oh, my goodness. And it had on it the tower that was being struck by lightning. And it had the wheel, right? The wheel. And it had, it had another one, didn't it? And I don't recall right now which one it was. But I became incredibly excited incredibly excited. My poor young children at the time were like, Mom, something's wrong with Dad. Well, something was always wrong with Dad when it came to these things. And I was like lathering at the mouth, you know. And I went and got a priest who was traveling with it. And I said, excuse me, Father, can I talk to you? And he was Italian. And he said, yes, what can I do for you? I said, can you tell me why these figures are here? And he's, you know, I won't imitate his voice. That would be insulting. Although he sounded a lot like Dr. Guido Sartucci, Father Guido Sartucci from Saturday Night Live, who I always thought was hilarious. Pardon me. And so he said, I have no idea. I said, you don't know who these represent? He said, I'm so sorry, but I don't. So he gave me a card, and he wrote, write to these people at the Vatican, and they will write you back. So I did. I wrote to them and said, could you please tell me who these people are? What these represent? And they never wrote me back. Doggone it. So I did my own research, and I did my own research for a long time, and I did find out who they were. The hanged men could be a couple of people. One was an Irish saint, not Saturnus. Oh, gosh, I've forgotten. And it never kills them. You know, you just hang them by one foot. But it sure teaches them a darn lesson. But the tower of St. Barbara. The other one was a hermit. That's right, St. Anthony. And St. Catherine on the wheel. I found that out myself. Now, how they didn't know that, and how he didn't know that, I'm sure he had a good idea, but he just didn't want to get caught up with this crazy rabbit-looking Egyptian guy with long hair who was freaking out and foaming at the lips, you know. I guess I don't blame him. So you realize that Tarot is a very specific tool, right? Right? Right. So Mars rules the tower, and Jupiter rules the wheel. Fortune, okay? Which makes sense, because we talk about fortune being good. Oh, that's fortune, you know? Fortuna, that's a bueno fortuna, you know? Jupiter brings good fortune. It can also bring bad if it's not so, you know, whatever. You know, that sort of thing. And so, the hanged man is water. And you see, now you're thinking, well, how do I know all this? How will I know all this? Well, you can do a couple of things. There are decks that show those affiliations. Certainly, the Aleister Crowley Thoth Tarot deck does. Every card on the deck shows an affiliation, except for the aces, because they don't have that same type of affiliation. And did you know that all the minor cards have affiliations as well? So, for example, I am right now pulling out a card at random. Here I have the Seven of Cups, known as Debauch, in the Crowley deck. And right there on the card is Venus at the top, and at the bottom is Scorpio. So the card is ruled by Venus and Scorpio. Now, right next to that is the Two of Discs. And that is ruled by, because you can see the markings right there, Jupiter in Capricorn. And these are the correct affiliations. Now, this is not random. It's not random. This was carefully designed, and it's based upon a very specific placement of the planets in a great wheel around. It's just fabulous. And when you understand how it's put together, it does seem rather random, but it is not rather random. It's based upon a precise placement of the planetary functioning when you know how Tarot was exactly designed by the Hermeticists back in the old days. That's what they did. They design things. And remember, this was all about memory, and it's based upon what's known as the Babylonian system of the planets, the Babylonian order of the planets, which is Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, the Sun, Venus, Mercury, and then the Moon. And then again, boom, 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 boom. And if you think about that, well, that's the slowest. Well, Saturn is the slowest, and then Jupiter is a little bit faster, and so on and so forth, right, to the very fastest, which is the Moon. And so you realize that these are all very, very powerful. And when we get right to Mars, the very first card that we start with is Wands, right? We have the Two of Wands. The Two of Wands starts the whole thing, seemingly. That's not exactly how it works. But the Two of Wands is Mars and Aries. So we start with Mars and Aries, and then we go from Mars and Aries, we go to the Sun and Aries, which is the Three of Wands, which is virtue. Well, the Sun and Aries is the first day of spring. What could be more virtuous than the first day of spring? Isn't this fascinating? Isn't this wonderful? You begin to really get to know this stuff. And so when you're looking at a chart, someone's chart, and you say, oh, this person was born, in their Aries. And so are they virtuous? Well, of course, not everyone with Mars and Aries is going to be, or as the Sun and Aries is going to be virtuous. But you can think about that card, the Three of Wands, or the Three of Wands, or the Two of Wands, or, and so what happens is you begin looking at a chart, and instead of just thinking, okay, they have this placement here and this placement here. For example, I have a full moon in Scorpio, 3 minutes to the full moon, until the full moon. So it was waxing. Wax on, wax off, but I'm waxing on, right, as you can tell. So I have the moon in Scorpio. So thinking tarot-wise, we think major arcana, and if every major arcana card has some affiliation somewhere, some are planetary, some are going to be zodiacal, for lack of a better term, some are going to be elemental that we can apply to outer planets, but if I have a full moon in Scorpio, so I would have... Scorpio is going to be the death card, but we know that the death card doesn't always mean death. It means mysticism, it means change, it means many, 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 many different things, right? Astrology's natural eighth house. And the eighth house is what? Well, it's this bubbling cauldron, isn't it? I call it astrology's haunted house. But it's also a house of mystery. It's a house of sensuality and sexuality. It's many, many different things, isn't it? It's just filled with gobbledygooey, interesting, fascinating, weird, creepy. And that death card can be so many things. Crowley, when he designed his death card, he had Lady Frieda Harris. She was not actually a lady, but he called her that. I think that's correct. She did a great job. But anyway, he had her. He had the skeleton with a DNA. She designed this DNA strand kind of, and wearing the mortuary hat of Osiris, which is brilliant. Brilliant. The rejuvenator of everything. So here we've got this very strange card, and he's got a scythe. So he's the reaper, but it's not so grim. He's dancing. He's dancing. I mean, that's pretty darn cool. And you think about it, and it's the great mysteries of life. You see, it's like my patron deity in the ancient Egyptian pantheon is not Thoth, it's not Osiris, it's not Ra, it's mine is Anubis. It's been that since I was a child. I've always been drawn to that. And it's not this muscle-bound, six-pack, eight-pack ab thing that people draw Anubis with claws and teeth and fangs. And no, that's not Anubis. When you become... where you know Anubis, when you understand Anubis, Anubis is extremely calm. Anubis is very gentle. Anubis is the jackal, that very lean dog that was on top of that chest in King Tutankhamun's tomb, sitting, watching, gazing, waiting, protecting, silent. Doesn't even growl. Doesn't need to, you see. Doesn't need abs. I mean, it doesn't need muscles. That's not the energy. Anubis is the twin brother of Thoth. Dahuti is Thoth. That's the Egyptian name for him, ancient Egyptian. Anubis' name is Anpu. It's the dark side of the moon, that which you never see. It's magic that is unknown and unknowable. Thoth wrote the magic, you see. He wrote medicine. It's music and mathematics and brilliant stuff, but Anubis is that which we can't know. It's the back of your own head. You don't get to see the back of your own head unless you're at the barber's office. He's got those mirrors set up in that way, you know, and then it's very disconcerting. But Anpu, he's that eighth house, you see. He's that thing you can only guess about. But anyway, so when you look at that eighth house, you're looking at that eighth house, you think about those things, and you think about that death card, but not about death. You think about that mystery, that idea, and you look about that in Scorpio too, and you think about that card. So with me, since I have the moon in there, it's the priestess. The priestess is within there. And Crowley's priestess is brilliant, you know? It just is. Now, my priestess, I chose a colored pencil drawing that my father did of an oasis that is near the pyramids. He loved that oasis. It was for him a sanctuary to get away from the hustle and bustle of his family and of Cairo. And it's a place that I think still exists today where there are date palms, where you can just pluck these dates off the trees, you know, and eat them and sit in the shade, and people bring their camels to water them. And it's at the edge of the desert, but it's in the desert, you know, and you can see the pyramids off in the distance, and he would go there to get away from things. And it was his priestess. It was his place of quietude. And he drew that picture well, it's a long story, but I took that picture and I used it, and then I put a moon up in it and a camel within the moon, because it's the Hebrew letter Gimel, and which means camel. And there's so much symbolism in that. But it's the priestess is a powerful image and is a sacred image. And one of the mysteries of it is about the seeds that the priestess holds. She's virginal. But did you know that a child, a girl within the womb, can have 2 million seeds within her? Ova? Within her, it's a miracle. It's marvelous, you know. So it has to do with creativity. It has to do, but for me, that priestess, that idea within the eighth house, within, and it's actually my seventh house. But so you think about that too, and you think about it in tarot terms, and you could say, well, what is the natural seventh? That would be Libra, right? And that's the adjustment card. And so you're juxtaposing, over, and your mind begins to wander, and you see images of justice. Is there justice? Yes, there is. There is always going to be a balance in nature. Now, in the human world, justice is fleeting. And is it real? Maybe not. But man, oh man, in the world of nature, there is always going to become a balance. It must occur. It must occur. Entropy is real. And that's the key word I have for the adjustment card, or for justice. And that is entropy. Entropy. So, when you merge tarot and astrology, you have a very powerful tool. You have something that can open doors and see clearly into people's lives and into their world and help them to focus on what they need to change. They may not want to change it. Trust me, after all the years I've been doing this, the times I've sat with clients and poured my heart out to them about what I thought the cards were telling them to do, because what I want them to do, what I think that would be good for them to do, trust me, was very different than what the advice was given to them through the oracles. Because the advice given them through the oracles was brilliant. Often what I thought they should do was very different. Because I'm just a guy. I'm a schlub. The advice I have is based upon, you know, my own limited information. But what the oracle saw, what they knew, was genius. Based upon truth, universal truth, and the best possible concepts, and their specific needs. And the people sitting across from me oftentimes didn't believe that, because they wanted to hear sometimes what they wanted to hear. And if you're going to be reading for people, you need to realize that. And you need to be able to say, okay. Okay. I can deal with that. Pardon me, I'm going to take a sip of tea here. That's my noisy coaster. I can deal with that. My coaster that has a lighthouse on it. It's a tile with a lighthouse on it. Why a lighthouse? Because lighthouses are very symbolic to me. For reasons you can probably guess. Because sometimes we get to save lives. Because at the very least, what we do is we represent a landmark, a point of navigation. At the very best, people get to say, oh, for a minute I know where I am. Auguste Fresnel, a genius, one of the most important men of his time, invented the Fresnel lens. Changed the history of the world. To this day, people still don't know exactly how he came up with it, but he did. And those lenses are still in lighthouses today. And they can't really be completely made the way he made them.
I think they're making them out of plastic now, but not quite the same. Huge. Some of them were huge, 12 feet tall. You could go and stand inside of them. How I would love to be close up to one of them. A first-order Fresnel lens. What they did is they concentrated the light and sent them out in horizontal beams. Horizontal beams could be seen for 50 miles out at sea. Think about that. 50 miles. Ugh. And I think I'm important at times. Of course, I'm shown that I'm not all the time. I live with the right person, I think. But there are people who do magnificent things and save lots and lots of lives. But people who do what we do, all we can do is light a beam every now and then. Remind them where they are. All we can do is show them a map with a dotted line on it. And show them the script that says, beyond this point there be monsters. Yeah. Right? And we pray for them and we hope for them. And we know their charts if we've run them. Oh. It's hard to do this sometimes. It's hard to do this. You know what's hard is when people lie to you. And I think, do you know what I do for a living? Do you know what I do and you're lying to me? I mean, come on. But it's love that keeps us doing this. It's love of art. It's love of science. But it's mostly love for them. Wanting the best for people. Because if I don't love them, I don't do it. And if I feel deception, well, a pure heart is easy to find. You can feel it right away, and if there's something not right there, you feel that right away too. But we're all scared. At some point, at some time, if we're not, then we're not human. And we rise to become politicians. Often. There have been good ones. So what you do is you get a deck or a book or a list that lists the cards and their affiliations. They're out there. Just type it in. Astrological affiliations with the cards. You'll find it. You don't need me to tell you all of them because they're out there. You get a Crowley deck, which is really very entertaining. You know, I didn't put them on my cards because I didn't need to because I didn't think anyone would ever want a deck of my cards. Turned out to be wrong. Do the royalty have affiliations? Yes, they do, but the royalty hold together everything. So they're actually part of one thing and part of another, but we won't get into that. Maybe at a future time. So if you're looking at, let's say, my, and I'm doing Vedic because that's what I do, but for instance, my my goodness, yeah, that's quite right. My ascendant is also in Vedic, is also Scorpio. So that's always fun. Yeah.
So that's all. But my seventh house is Taurus. And so, and I have Venus in there, and I have Mercury in there, and I have the Sun in there. And so I've got all that stuff in there. And so we say, what we do is we lay it down. We say there's the Hierophant. So if this is a Tarot reading, you're saying, okay, Hierophant and Empress and Magus and the Sun. And right next to that is the Wheel. And how would you read that? Well, that kind of becomes what you do. And in what order are they? Well, they'd be in pretty much in that order, you know. And that's how you read it. You kind of say, okay, the Hierophant is kind of the main card because that's the house they're in, or that's the sign they're in. And then boom, 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 boom. And then because it's the seventh house, you say, okay, then I'm thinking that would be the natural seventh house. Well, that's Libra, right? And that would be the adjustment card or the justice card. And so you throw that in the back of your mind as well. But is that going to be, what's that going to be like? Well, I actually have Gemini, Jupiter and Gemini, don't I? Yeah. So you think about that. Fortune with the Lover's card. Fortune with the Lover's card. Does that mean luck? Or does that mean the wheel keeps turning and turning? How's that going to work out? So, but you have to then use astrological ideas. You say, well, what happens to be? And then you go back to astrology. Well, what's in Pisces? What's in, you know, Sagittarius? Well, what's in Sag? Mars. The Tower. Boom. And then you start thinking like an astrologer. Egad. Egad. I mean, that's the fun of it. You're merging these two things. Try it. Take a chart and take the cards out after you've found out. And some of them are very obvious, you know. Yeah, some of them are very obvious. The Lovers is Gemini. Cancer is the Chariot. Leo is strength or lust, depending on the deck you're using. Virgo is the Hermit. I mean, you just go through and you just like I said, type it in and try it out. Try it with your own chart. And do you agree? Do you agree that this is okay? This kind of seems like a little cluster of me, but in the long run, I think you'll use it because it's an incredibly powerful way to read. It takes some practice, takes some time, and it's a great way just to do a reading, too. So what I used to do is I would lay out all the cards. I called it the linear. I would lay a row of six on the bottom, a row of six on the top. And that way you could see oppositions, you could see trines very easily. Yeah, I loved it. Loved it. And then you would say, okay, the question is about love. So you could find immediately the seventh house. You know, it's about business. Well, the 10th house, very easily to find. It's about family, brothers, third house, right? And then you'd pull the cards out of the third house, you'd lay those cards down, you'd read that pile, and then you'd, if that didn't answer the question, you'd go from there, you know? there's the derivative house system. Have you heard of that? In astrology, where you ask a question, you say, okay, my brother-in-law is having problems. So it's a sibling's husband. So you go to the third house, and then you go seven from that, which would be the 10th, right? And it's such fun. This stuff can just be the most fun you've ever had. Play with it. That's what it's about. If it's not fun, don't do it. But trust me, if you play with it, you're going to have the most fun you've ever had. I haven't been bored in decades. Trust me. Okay? All right? It's all right.
Okay. That went by very quickly. I hope you had a good time. I had a wonderful time. I have a marvelous time with you every single week. Thank you for that. You are all marvelous, wonderful people. And I love you very much. And I hope you have a good time. Remember, you can write me. The address is Motarot, M-O-T-A-R-O-T, at comcast.net. Or you can find me on Facebook. Okay, I'm easy to find. I have a business page, which I visit about once every 7-8 years. And I have a public page, too, just a regular person page. And I don't care how you find me. But if you want to write me, feel free. I'd love to hear from you. Until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3.